Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for being part of this. Well, it's nearly Christmas, isn't it? I have to say, this year, I feel less Christmassy than I think I ever have in my life. When I was a little kid, we used to have wonderful Christmases. My mum and dad used to work. I mean, you know, I feel really guilty about it now. They used to work so hard, making it all perfect. They'd be buying the presents and wrapping. And they would, you know, make sure that they were well hidden, because I, you know, couldn't be finding them before the great day. And my mother and father would work really hard on the turkey. And they would make soup from the remains of the turkey afterwards. They were wonderful times. And I have to say that I've really known nothing like that in recent years. But this year in particular, with lockdown and all the other rubbish, I think I'm going to be taking some persuading to get into the Christmas spirit. But who knows? Maybe I will. I'm doing a couple of radio shows over Christmas, as far as I know. One of them is on Christmas Eve. If you can join me then, I would love to talk with you. This is on Talk Radio, so I'm doing that one, Christmas Eve late, 10 to 1, and also Boxing Night 26th, 10 to 1. And having a break on Christmas Day, and then The Unexplained is back on the 27th, isn't it, the Sunday. So, you know, it's going to be a bit of a working Christmas one way and another. And, you know, I hope that you have peace and joy, and I hope that your Christmas shopping is not too fraught. Mad, mad world this is. Now, thank you very much to Adam, my webmaster, for his hard work. Thank you to Haley, as ever, for booking the guests. Thank you to you for being part of this. If you've made a donation to The Unexplained Online recently, thank you so much for helping me to continue with this. And we will step across the threshold into 2021 and take it wherever it will go. Special guest on this edition, the catch-up with Linda Moulton Howe. A couple of current hot-button topics to talk about with Linda. I know that you, from the emails and messages you've been sending me, you're very fond of Linda, so am I. You know, I've been talking to Linda on radio for 20 years now, since I first heard her on with Art Bell. So, you know, we go back a long way. Linda is a veteran investigator. Linda, of course, investigative reporter, journalist, researcher, award winner. Check her out on her website, earthfiles.com. Linda Moulton Howe, one of Art Bell's veteran guests. They were always on together, and that is how I first discovered her. So an update from her coming soon. Don't forget, if you email me through the website, theunexplained.tv, please tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. It's lovely to hear from you, especially at this time of year, as they say. Okay, let's get to New Mexico now. Linda Moulton Howe is there, and Linda, thank you for coming back on my show.
Well, it's great to be here at a time where your country is now leading the way with getting the vital vaccine against the horrible COVID. I'm just thrilled for that dear woman who got the first shot and seems so grateful.
And there's a man who's been on CNN, and he's made international headlines. A gentleman of 90, I think, or 91, who was interviewed in the street by CNN about what it was like to get the first vaccination, and he said he wanted to do it because he wanted to go and see his kids at Christmas time. So, Linda, thank you very much for coming on my show. There is an awful lot to talk about as we try and walk our way through various crises here. I was interested by this, and so are you. I knew you would be. This is the man by the name of Chaim Eshed, the man who ran the Israeli space program, telling the world, apparently, for reasons that I can't even begin to work out, but it's more than interesting, it's stunning to read, that the powers that be know about aliens, are working with aliens, there is a base on Mars, but we cannot be told about it, or it's been thought that we can't be told about it because the aliens and those with whom they collude here don't think we're ready. What do you make of this?
Well, I reported last night on my Earth Files YouTube broadcast that I do on Wednesday nights around the world that in reading what was in the Israeli Tel Aviv newspaper about the release of his new book, and that they put four paragraphs allegedly either in an interview or from the book in the Tel Aviv newspaper. And when I saw the sentence that there is a deep underground base on Mars in which there have been meetings between extraterrestrial biological entities and world humans in science. And the implication was that Professor Chaim Escht has been one of those people in those meetings. I thought back as a professional journalist to 1988 when I was in Denver, Colorado, and I received a phone call from a man who identified himself as working in meteorology at the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. He said, I have a meeting in Denver. I am aware of your work on animal mutilations. He said, I would like to come and talk with you about some very important aspects of UFOs and ETs. We met in Denver. He had a manuscript that he was working on for a book. He had astonishing photos. He had documents. And this is what he told me. He had a good friend working at White Sands Missile Range who was based in the Naval Research Lab, which has been in juxtaposition to the White Sands Missile Range for decades. And that his contact in the what is known as the NRL in New Mexico told him that he had a knowledge, firsthand knowledge, that there was a base deep underground on Mars, and that it had been there for a very long time, and that there had been communication with those ETs, and that the NRL employee knew for a fact that we were in communication. Further, that those two individuals made communication with a physicist who had come to White Sands for work. The meteorologist had talked to him, and the physicist told them that starting in 1972, he had been in a craft, not our human craft. He had been in a craft that had taken him to Mars six times for meetings deep underground in a base on Mars where there were extraterrestrial biological entities with humans from Earth in meetings. 72 was the year that was given. I remember listening to this man with his putting the photos and the documents on the table in 1988 in Denver, that a part of me is probably feeling like you and listeners, my God, can this be true? And then over the course of a 2 or 3 hour meeting with the meteorologist from White Sands, one of the most critical mission assigned places going back all the way to World War II when it was known as the White Sands Proving Ground and the development of rocketry. And today it is one of the most sophisticated places on the planet. These men, from my knowledge now in 2020, were telling absolutely the truth. After that initial meeting, over the next 20 years, so that would be 88 to 98 and 1998 to 2008, the information that came to me from other individuals that would be in the category of government or military whistleblowers, the one outstanding reinforcement of everything that I was told in 1988 was in the most extraordinary 7-hour discussion that I have ever had in my life to date. It was December of 1999. It started a month before the physical meeting with a call from a man who worked for the World Bank. He said that he had a colleague who was working in the Defense Intelligence Agency in the United States, known as DIA, and that his colleague was retiring after 23 years of working on extraterrestrial biological entity investigations. This is the first phone call to me. They said, we want to put together a meeting because he's retiring. He would like to communicate with you. It will be a one-time meeting. Are you willing to travel? And I said, yes. And a month later, the three of us met in a location that the DIA analyst picked. It was brilliant. It involved a lot of large boats and other small motoring boats. So there was a mixture of white noise the entire time of where we were. He picked a place for us to sit that was close to all of these boats. And as we sat down, the three of us, he said, this is a quote, Howard, this is for real. I don't think our satellites can penetrate this white noise. That's how it started. And in 7 hours, he began with a kind of Socratic dialogue, trying to find out what I knew about the geophysical makeup of our planet. For example, Linda, do you know what the diameter of this planet is?
Not offhand, Linda. I can make I can certainly make an informed estimate.
I happen to know the answers, and this is leading to something very important. I said, I think it's 8,000 miles in diameter. Mm-hmm. He said, do you know what the circumference is? I said, I think it's 25,000 miles. He said, my job for the last 23 years in the DIA has been to monitor and analyze the presence and conflict between three competing extraterrestrial biological civilizations that have been using this planet as a laboratory for at least 270 million years, and our government has proof. And when I said, what is the proof? He said, it's too dangerous for you and for me if I told you. So I'm protecting you by not giving you the answer to that question. But he said, I want you to now think, what would the planet look like if you took away all the water in the oceans and the seas? Mm-hmm. And like a child, it must be that we get certain ideas from grade school embedded in our minds and that it doesn't really change. And I said, probably like an eaten apple core. And he said, what is the depth of the deepest ocean? And I thought about the Mariana Trench, and I said that. And he said, how deep is it? I said, well, I know it's over 7 miles. All right, and you just told me that the diameter of this planet is 8,000 miles. What would it look like if you took away the water? He was actually doing this with me. It's like a Socratic dialogue. And then I said, oh, it would look like a nibbled apple, meaning that if you took all the water away, this still would be a sphere. And he said, we are dealing with intelligences so advanced that their approach to any planet, any body, any moon is in the realm of spherical geometry. And they have the ability to find out whether there are deep, deep, what would be considered cavernous spaces below the surfaces of anything that they encounter. And that for the most part, that's where they go. We humans think of life only on the surface. We're dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities that immediately look for the spaces that they can enter and use as bases far below the surface.
And does that, Linda, does that imply, did he tell you, that one of the reasons they do that is that they know that we would have trouble getting to those places? We find it hard to explore those places.
It's two reasons. That's one. The second is the whole rest of the discussion. What is the interaction of three competing extraterrestrial biological entities? What is their focus with our planet, with humans, and with Earth life? And his answer was what I came to in my investigations of animal mutilations. There has been a harvest of genetic material from this planet, from evolving primates, and he completely and totally agreed with what I had reported in my first book, An Alien Harvest, from having the meeting at Kirtland Air Force Base with the Air Force Office of Investigations agent who showed me a document, and that in the document that I was shown in 1983, that it went into the presence of these extraterrestrial biological entities, and that one of their big harvests from the Earth is genetic material to mix and match genes to create Earth life in this laboratory. They consider it a laboratory because of all of the oceans and the perfect distance from the sun that keeps this in a milder temperature, and that they used. This is now going to where the meeting was in December 1999, that they used some of the genetic material that was harvested from humans in sperm and eggs in order to make human camouflage bodies for their movement on the surface of the Earth, where Homo sapiens sapien lives, while they made all of their bases deep underground in the Earth, in the center of the Moon, in Mars, and definitely in Ganymede. And as the 7 hours evolved, in all of the details that he was telling me about what he had learned monitoring and analyzing the competition, he was reinforcing so much that I had heard piecemeal and that I had myself concluded that the animal mutilations and the human abductions, which were the two major issues that Earth life on the surface had encountered, even when all of the governments and the power brokers of this planet for at least 5 to 10,000 years have made sure that Homo sapiens sapien never, ever knew that extraterrestrial biological entities were harvesting from this planet, terraforming this planet, harvesting genetic material, manipulating genetic material in order to interact on the surface of this planet without humans ever detecting. And that one of the keys to everything that has occurred on our planet and has been categorized in large boxes as religion or philosophy or science or medicine, that we, Homo sapiens sapien, have never been told that we are one of the genetic experiments by these three competing other beings. I have no trouble having a discussion like that and coming to the conclusion that the document that I was shown at Kirtland Air Force Base on April 9th, 1983, that said, these are the exact words, they've never left my mind. These extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapiens sapien. That we, humanoids, we are an extraterrestrial experiment.
Okay, so that would explain why there are certain aspects of our origins that we don't entirely understand, and there are still gaps in our knowledge. But how does all of this tie in? I think it does on some levels with what Chaim Eshed, however you pronounce his name, the former Esht, head of the Israeli Space Agency, Eshed, what Chaim Eshed said. How does this tie in with that? And why do you think, why would you speculate this man who is now 87 is wanting to say this now?
I think that if I had had Chaim Eshed's life, and that I had held all of the positions that I outlined last night on my Earth Files YouTube broadcast, which is available for all the world to go to now and listen. He has held critical positions, and he is bi-national. He spent a lot of time in the United States working on aerospace projects, as well as in Israel, holding tremendously sensitive positions. That at age 87, I think that I can relate that you would pass a certain age in a world that seems as troubled and chopped up as this one does right now, that before you passed into another dimension, that you would want to state at least some of the truths that you knew, that included that there is a deep base in a lava tube. Well, he didn't say a lava tube. That's what I've been told. The base is in a big lava tube on Mars. In the last 2 years, Howard, in science journals, in major Nature, in major Guardian, New York Times, there have been headline after headline, article after article. I have them all. It appears that scientists are now looking at lava tubes underground on Mars as the safest and best place to have bases. I think those headlines are coming because we've had a base that has been there since at least 72 with humans going to it, and that now we are in the remarkable situation in which power brokers on the Earth still do not want the 7.8 billion humans to know all the truth, but that there
are... Why are we exploring? I'm sorry to jump in, but why are we exploring Mars in the way that we're doing it now? Because if we know all about it already, if we're part of a base there, then the efforts that we're making to dig into the surface, drill into it, are puny, and they're pointless, and they're expensive.
Where I was headed was exactly that what is happening now with Elon Musk now making announcements that he thinks in 2024, 3 years from now, because we're about to turn to 2021, that he will launch a manned starship to Mars, that they will be the first people to go into a base there. And nobody has been explaining to anybody about how they're going to get people there to go into a base without constructing the base first. And the truth is that base in a lava tube has been there for decades.
And you're saying that Elon Musk knows this?
Oh, I'm sure he does, but... What is now occurring is that there is going to be an effort to cover everything up to when Elon Musk gets to Mars with a human passenger load, that all of the previous decades, no matter which ETs constructed the base and how many meetings there have been between humans and ETs in this deep lava tube base, it will all be covered just like an erasure in time, because the getting there, all of the Elon Musk effort will be what all of the news programs will report about, and that is where the history of humans on Mars will begin, even if all the rest of this has also occurred, and that physicists and scientists and perhaps even Chaim Escht was in that deep lava tube base on Mars, and he knows that he is at 87, is going to pass into another dimension, and that he feels that he at least will say, as those four paragraphs in the Tel Aviv newspaper, that the ETs are here, they are among us based on this Earth, they are in a base on Mars, scientists have been there and astronauts with them, that there is a federation just like had been depicted by Gene Roddenberry on Star Trek, that there is some kind of federation, that the federation is interacting with whoever the power brokers are on this planet. You can begin to see the whole picture. And then when you step back and you realize that minds like Chaim Escht have been in meetings on Mars, in the Earth, underground, S4, Area 51. Everything that's important is all deep underground. The same at Wright-Patterson, the same at China Lake, that all around this planet, that the major...
Can I ask you a favor, Linda? I'm hearing your emails drop in. Is it possible for you to mute your emails?
Yeah, I'm sorry that I'm sitting near my computer.
It's okay. I can just hear ping, 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 and my listener will tell me about that. But it's fine. You know, what you're saying is fascinating, so they're probably not going to notice those pinging noises anyway. They don't bother me.
Okay, I've moved back. You can still hear me. I moved back five. It'll still go off, but I won't be right on top of it.
It's absolutely fine. So, look, there are a couple of important points about this. Are you saying then that in your belief, and Chaim Escht's words play into this, maybe, that what we are doing is we are trying to get ourselves up to speed on Mars? In other words, we're going through the motions of exploring Mars, you know, drilling into the surface, and then we will, it's almost like, I don't know, it's like a TV soap. You know, it's like, just imagine, you know, the old soap, The Fugitive, that I'm rewatching now. And people showed that in different ways. Some of them showed the first season, and then because, you know, some of the storylines maybe weren't what they wanted, they dropped a lot in the middle, and then they came back at the end of it when we discovered that the hero of the series was actually innocent, as we'd been told all along. This sounds to me like we're trying to do something like some TV stations did with The Fugitive here, that we're trying to cut out all the bit in the middle, and we're trying to, at the end of it, say, and actually, look what we've discovered, without actually saying we knew this all along.
Yes, absolutely. And that it will be so astonishing when they finally tell the truth from the distance of Mars to the Earth. It will be safe announcements, because they will always be couched in that we have a space force on Earth that protects us forever. We can now tell you that we are finding skeletons on Mars. We are finding artifacts. We are finding archaeology. Mars is going to become the next big archaeological excitement, while they will try to the best of their ability to keep all of those years from World War II to 2024. It's like it's going to be softly erased, everything that happened, to keep this a secret.
But if they kept it secret for that long and it's worked for them, why would they want to be revealing it?
It's a very good question, Howard, and I think it comes to the difficult part of all of this. I can say with knowledge, I'm not talking beliefs. You use the word belief. I'm talking with hard knowledge. There are intelligences that are hostile. There are many more intelligences that are not hostile. One of the issues that is going to be facing this planet for the rest of this century, if hostiles wanted to make a move against Earth, would they succeed? And on the other side of that question is, how strong is the alliance with intelligences that would like to help Earth versus those that are hostile? I am not the only voice who has described the friendlies, the neutrals, and the hostiles. The remote viewers from the 1980s working at Fort Meade, right next to the shiny NSA building that included Lynn Buchanan and Pat Price and Joe McMonagle and Ingo Swann was earlier, but they were all extremely talented. And all of them all of those remote viewers, Lynn Buchanan has stressed this with me, that they were tasked to, when the remote viewer is tasked, they do not know what the target is. I hope that people understand that. They learn much later what the target was, and this is the, what they are talking about today. They were all tasked with, is there other consciousness in this universe? They all got, the universe is teeming with consciousness, and that the key is many other frequencies, and that within this complex cosmos, they all got remote viewing of friendlies to the Earth, more neutrals to the Earth, and some hostiles to the Earth.
Whose experiment are we then? You said that we were an experiment.
Yes.
Whose experiment?
Without being a definitive of information that I must respect, we are definitely a genetic experiment. And that one of the biggest paradoxes, schizophrenic paradoxes, is that in our own Genesis biblical literature, the Adam and Eve, first humans, are in a garden monitored and communicated with by what?
Well, the Bible tells us God.
No. Who is the teacher to Adam and Eve in the garden?
Well, the serpent.
Yes.
Right. I've never thought of it that way, Linda. Okay. So where does that leave us in 2020 then, Linda? We're going to Mars. Mars is, you know, next year is going to be a really important year for Mars. I feel in my gut that we're about to get amazing revelations that we're being prepared for, but it's just a gut feeling. And I'm thinking around the things that I read in the papers. It's all I know. But here we have Dr. Chaim Escht, former space chief in Israel, a man who clearly wants to say something now while he has the time and the breath in him and the life in him to be able to say it. What do we do then? Do we just say, well, Linda Moulton Howe told us this was going to happen anyway, and just sit back and wait for it all to happen? Or are there people preparing to do something about this revelation?
Well, remember one of his first sentences, Professor Escht, I have nothing to lose, in describing what he knows, because he's 87. And in that set up the context for people to read what he said without resistance. I have nothing to lose. What is happening behind the scenes on this planet right now is all related to the so-called Space Force. The United States has one.
And us here in the UK, we're getting one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the Space Force, as I understand it, does have legitimate reason to be concerned about one of the other intelligences that is hostile. Simultaneously, if the remote viewers are right, the allies, the friendlies, and the neutrals are larger. There are more of them.
But right, so we're holding the balance of power.
But what we don't know, because nobody is talking about this aspect, is which technology do we, the United States, our allies, England and Australia and Canada and New Zealand, from World War II, which technologies have the ETs helped us with? Because they have the advanced ability to know everything there is to know about problems in this universe. We would never know if we were not getting information from those allies.
So where do we go? Linda, I'm confused as to where we stand then.
Well, I don't think that the general populations have anything to say or any input or anything. This has been handled by power brokers for 40,000 years. It'll be continue to be handled by power brokers, but there it reaches a point where it's becoming absurd that the human population is not told the truth, that there is a lot of other life form in this universe. And by going to Mars and setting up another base and getting some humans from Earth there, there is at least the guarantee that humanity, no matter what's going to happen to Earth as a planet, it will have another base on Mars. And from there, they may go to Epsilon Eridani or wherever. With the idea that humanity will now, in the rest of this century, the whole huge, exciting part of it will be guaranteeing that humanity is not locked into one unstable planet, that we will survive in other areas. That is
okay,
as far
and
as
we
I
will
understand.
Do that exploration in league with the friendly aliens with whom we've been in alliance for a very long time.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going on for a long time.
But from what you've said, we are never going to be told the full truth of this. We'll be told a portion of this.
I don't know. What I'm you're asking, what can we do?
Yeah.
Humanity has never had any option in any of this. Not once. The people who have been riding this bucking horse, they're not the general population. We've all been lied to by policies of denial. And if you go back to World War II, and you know, at least from leaked documents that have come through Robert, you know Bob Wood, who has gotten really legitimate documents that have held up over the last 30 years, that FDR was first exposed to the concept of a space vehicle and clones. They discovered they were clones, and that must have set off alarm bells. If we are taking bodies out of crashed UFOs in Missouri in 1941, and they turn out to be clones, who made the clones? And then came World War II and the Foo Fighters and Winston Churchill and General Eisenhower and so many knew for a fact that there were spheres that were silver glowing. There were disks that were running rings around their jets. They knew that they were not human. And that's come up in documents that have been released by the National Archives in England. Then you come from World War II and the Truman administration kicking in by we got out of the war because of the bombs in August of 1945 or whenever that was finally signed. And so 46 is the in-between year between World War II and what? 47, June, Ken Arnold reports 9 craft moving like stones or platters skipping across water. The press runs with flying saucers outside of Mount Rainier in June 24th, 1947. 1 week later comes the alleged crashes of UFOs in the first week of July. And then the famous headline of all time, July 8th, made it into the Roswell Daily Record, flying disc crashes on Corona Ranch. All of that time, by the time of the crash, it's my understanding that people in Washington were already concerned investigating what was happening with metallic craft that they knew were not being made on Earth.
And indeed, then, you know, even in 1953, was it? There were UFOs over Washington?
July 52.
Okay.
So you go from 47, where it started everywhere in 1947, Ken Arnold was the first public, and then Roswell. But there were all kinds of UFO events in 47, including the green fireballs that Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, who was a very educated meteorologist, went on the record saying these were not astronomical bodies. Because they could move in 90-degree angles and stop in the air. And so 47 to 52 is only 5 years later, and there was that massive twice in the course of a week and a half, these two large overflights in Washington, D.C. that were reported in national media as UFOs over the nation's capital. Why did that occur? That is a very good question. What was going on between the extraterrestrial other intelligences and the U.S. government and other parts of the world? We've never been told the truth about what was really happening.
So do you think, look, I had a conversation with Jacques Vallée very recently, and we were discussing the Tic Tac UFOs, 2004, you know all about that, and the related sighting in 2015. And I have discussed that before as well, international headlines. And he was discussing the fact that maybe there was some kind of show being put on to demonstrate something to us. So do you think that these decades of UFO sightings are actually a kind of demonstration that there is this power battle going on? There is this situation, this uneasy alliance, and there are bad guys and good guys around the uneasy alliance. Is this the point of it all? Is this what the crop circles are about?
I have on good source that the Tic Tac FLIR that David Fravor shot with his camera from that jet off of the coast of San Diego down toward the northern Mexico, it's entirely artificial intelligence. And that a lot of the so-called UFO phenomena, not just in this century, last century, and all of the centuries going back, is that so much of what has interacted with this planet is artificial intelligence that would have been incomprehensible to humans in World War II. And that when you realize that something traveling at 30,000 miles an hour that stops on a dime or does a 90-degree turn that would kill any human pilot in it, the advanced intelligences don't have to worry about organic life forms. They have created and are so far advanced that probably all of the craft that would be sent from a progenitor home planet out into this arm of the galaxy, whether in exploration or deciding what planet that they are going to do experiments on, it would all be AI. And that the beings that would go with those AI craft eventually would also be AI.
So are you saying that we have been part for a very long time of the biggest computer game?
I don't know that I would say a computer game. I'm saying that there's an entire other level of technological advancement when it comes to very advanced intelligences exploring, harvesting, manipulating all kinds of solar systems in this vast universe. The progenitor does not have to do the exploration. So that is why in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, possibly, that crash, which I am convinced occurred, and there were three bodies, and there were too many witnesses who saw the bodies, that's what I think nails that case. And then to learn that the analysis done under Truman's order, that they were clones, that would have been the first signal to all of those intelligent minds in Washington. Mm-hmm. If they're clones, where are the progenitors who made these clones and this craft? And that means, from my perspective today, we have been dealing largely on Earth with the AIs that go out and explore and do the work.
So in other words,
who are the progenitors that created the exploratory forces?
And what have we got under the oceans, maybe under Antarctica then? What is it that's living there? Are they AIs? Are they deputies? Have they been sent out from somewhere else? Sounds to me like you're saying we're dealing with the middle management and the bosses are somewhere else.
I think in a lot of cases that's true. That's a good way to put it. The Antarctic structure that Spartan 1 described because he walked in the halls, and don't forget I had another Navy SEAL still extremely active who supported everything Spartan 1 told me and a whole hell of a lot more. But he said, Linda, I could never, ever, under any circumstances, go on any kind, even backlighted or voice altered, because he's still active. But
And just for the benefit of listeners who didn't catch that, what did Spartan 1 tell you, this whistleblower?
Well, I'm talking about an hour documentary that I produced that a Navy SEAL in August of 2003, on a mission to extract an archaeologist from a 2 mile deep under ice architecture in Antarctica, walked the halls that were rooms, were 9 acres. They called them rooms, nine acre rooms. Everything is massive. 80-foot ceilings.
And we don't have to, well, we wouldn't have had technology
doors.
To make that. You know, we couldn't have made that.
No, and where it becomes really important is when, to my mind, in terms of the implication of this vast, vast architecture made out of black basalt, is that when you begin to study the evolution of what became Antarctica, and you have to go back about 100 million years to Pangaea and the break-off of what we think of as South Africa, and that this huge landmass, it's the distance in diameter Antarctica to the United States. It's massive. It's a massive continent. And that it moved over a period of some 70, 80, 90 million years, going from what we would call South Africa and settling at the South Pole. That entire time, it was tropical with dinosaurs on it. There's tremendous dinosaur evidence in Antarctica. And that the pollens all relate to what you would call plants that would only grow in heat, like ferns. 34 million years ago, that huge continent is at the South Pole, and it is completely free of ice, 34 million years ago. It's tropical.
So do you think that's when the building work was done?
Wait. 1 million years later, 33 million years ago, for reasons unknown, ice and snow and cold temperatures begin to descend upon this tropical continent. It builds up that by the end of 33 going into 32 million, there's 2 miles of ice when there was no other feature on the planet that provoked that kind of deep snow ice temperature. What did happen? Why did Antarctica become covered with 2 and in some cases 3 miles deep of ice at a time when the rest of the world was not so affected? And if that is all true geophysically, how could 80-foot high ceilinged, 9-acre rooms in 6 vast architectures have been built out of black basalt after the buildup of the ice? And if it couldn't be during the buildup of the ice, then it means that the architecture that is there is at least 34 million years old. Now, one more piece. Mm-hmm. If that were true, if all of that architecture made out of dense black basalt at these gigantic scales with symbols all over everything, with temperature still automatic, with lighting coming out of walls as the Navy SEALs that have moved through there have seen. It's still operational by whom? Go back to 34 million years. And then jump over to evolution of primate life on Earth. The earliest that Homo erectus has ever been stated by scientists as standing up in Africa was 2 million years ago. They can't get Homo erectus any earlier than 2 million. Put 2 over 34. 2 million years ago was the first standing up primate, when 34 million years ago, something began constructing gigantic architecture on a continent that a million years later would be completely covered by 2 to 3 miles of ice. Did the intelligence that built all that huge architecture cause all of the ice to partition, like to build a partition between it working Earth from Antarctica? That is a question that the Navy SEAL posed to me.
So here we are exploring our own history, and there are many people who are discovering all the time. Every year we're getting more discoveries that actually our history goes back an awful, I'm talking about us human beings, our history goes back a lot further than we thought it did. Actually, the full story is mind-bogglingly bigger.
I think so, too.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
I don't find any of this frightening. I find it galvanizing. I find it provoking me to continue to work hard. I have been, since 41 years ago, my first investigation of the animal mutilations that were bloodless and trackless, and sheriffs telling me, Sheriff Tex Graves, Linda, let me save you some time. The perpetrators of these animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. And when you realize that in the 1960s and the 1970s, that deputy sheriffs and sheriffs in the United States and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Canada, they were both discovering the same evidence, bloodless, trackless, and it was the lack of tracks in face powder dust that law enforcement were the first faced with the evidence that had to admit there's only one way that we can see that a 1,700-pound cow could be lying on this face powder dust with an ear, eye, tongue, jaw, genitals, and rectum cored out without one drop of blood, no fluid, dry edges to the excisions, and no tracks around the body, including the animal's own tracks, and that goes 2 plus 2 equals 4. Something took this animal and lowered it from above onto the ground where it is lying in the dust.
And that is a story that you will hear repeated today. You will hear it in the United Kingdom. I mean, this seems to have been a bumper year for animal mutilations of the inexplicable kind. There was a spate of horse mutilations in France 2 or 3 months ago. They were trying to get to the bottom of that.
And the headline that came out of France that stopped me in my tracks, this was at least 3 months ago, at least 185 mutilated horses in France. What in the world is the reason for there to be the bloodless mutilation of more than 185 horses in France in 2020?
Of course, some people suggested satanic rituals, as they do with cattle mutilations, but that doesn't explain the surgical ways that these things are done.
No. And let me just give you one of the most important educations that I ever had. I had produced a strange harvest it was broadcast, and it began to be like a bomb went off around the world. I was at the CBS station in Denver. They began pulling the mail into my office in these gigantic gray canvas bags. And remember, it was first broadcast May 25th, 1980. No computers, no fax machines. This was just telephones and hard letters then, typed or handwritten. And the amount of people that were getting in touch with me to tell me about their own experiences as a rancher with animal mutilations or the things that they had seen in the sky or having entities in their houses or their rooms. So many people, including ranchers in the United States, Canada, and other places in the world, said in these letters, I saw a beam come down out of a round object in the sky. It came down where my animals were pastured, and I admit it, I was so scared, I ran back to the ranch house, and I didn't go back to the pasture until the sun came up, and there was my mutilated cow. So this is what I'm trying to say. There have been a lot of people, a lot of humans ranching and farming who have seen what I think is the technology, the beams that can lower and raise these animals. But why, if the non-humans can pretty much make anything they do invisible, it comes back to your earlier question, why do they flaunt themselves with the overflights? Why do they allow some people to see the beam technology, which is how so much plants, animals, humans are taken up into their craft technology? Why is it invisible most of the time, and why is it allowed to be seen at others as if we have been subjected to a conditioning program over all of these decades, something that John Keel and Jacques Vallée were the first to report, a planet being conditioned by another intelligence?
Kind of looks that way, doesn't it, Linda? Last question, and unfortunately, we've only got 2 minutes to answer this, so let's see how we do.
Okay.
If you talk to Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center, which I have several times this year, he will tell you that despite the fact that the world has been in lockdown in this miserable, miserable year, and people haven't been getting out as much, it's been a bumper year for UFO sightings everywhere. Why do you think that might be?
There is some kind of pressure that the Space Force world is dealing with that has to do with the non-human intelligence. And that comes back to my earlier discussion that there are friendlies, neutrals, and hostiles. There is some added pressure that hasn't been there before. That's the best way for me to put it. And remember, so much of what is in our skies that to the human mind is a UFO is artificial intelligence.
This is a fascinating topic that we have to return to. I've got to tell you, Linda, there is a lot of love for you out there among my listeners. I mentioned on my Facebook page that you were coming on. I got a lot of very nice messages for you. A lot of people around the world love what you do.
Thank you.
Very, very, very last question. You know, neither of us is 21 anymore.
I will be 79 in January, and I always go out
amazing
on birthdays, and I thank the sun and the divine field for another revolution on this amazing planet around the sun. And I feel that if you look at birthdays and the evolution of our becoming more mature, if you look at it like that, instead of some kind of weird socializing that humanity accepted long ago, that aging was supposed to be that by the age of 60 or 65, you were to stop working and die. That's just crazy. And that we should be now moving. I think it's going to happen that biological medicine, we're going to have lives guaranteed to 150. We may finally get up to Noah at 400. That for some reason, that humanity, the primates, were put through a period in which we were given Drosophila fly lives, as if turning around the genetics was important. And I just don't buy into it. I just try to stay as healthy and strong as I can.
Well, you know, more power to your elbow, Linda, and I hope that there are going to be people following your work who'll pick it up when, you know, neither of us are around anymore. But that's going to be a long time in the future. I'm just looking at the messages that I've got here, and they've been coming in through the last couple of hours since I posted this message. It's a guy called John who says, always enjoy listening to Linda. Addy says, Linda's always a treat. Dale says, fantastic guest, and he wanted me to ask you about Antarctica, which I did. Craig Good. Says, how great that you're coming on. He was listening to an Art Bell interview with you on the archives this morning. Andy says, great guest. Ken says, Linda is such a thorough researcher. Anita says, looking forward to hearing to Linda. And so it goes. So Linda,
I'm so glad. That means that at least some of the population isn't going to be running for the exits, no matter what is coming down the pike in news, that we are not alone in this universe, Howard, and that's the bottom line.
Let's talk again, and happy birthday. Right. We've been talking for 20 years. Let's make a plan to talk for 20 more, Linda.
All right, I'm for it.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The incomparable Linda Moulton Howe, your thoughts about her and all of my guests here on The Unexplained, always welcome, always gratefully received. Please go to my website, theunexplained.tv, follow the link and you can send me email, guest suggestions, whatever you want from there. And it's always good to hear from you. More great guests in the pipeline here at the home of The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.